Welcome back to another episode of the Tan and J-Man Show. I am the J-Man, Josh Munt. Tanner will be joining me here in a handful of minutes. Hope everyone has had a fantastic Monday and a fantastic past week. Baseball, football. We even got college basketball practice starting, so fun time of year. We're sitting here. Baseball-wise, though, the Cubs had an interesting week. They swept the Pirates in a three-game series, which saw them clinch a playoff spot for the first time since 2020, first time in a real postseason since 2018. And they celebrated like they had just won the World Series, which I know it's fun to make the postseason and all of that, but they had the champagne flying through the air in the clubhouse after the game, and which is good. Like, yeah, it's a long season, long road. I know it rubbed some fans the wrong way that they were celebrating that hard after blowing a whatever it was 7.5 game division lead to the Brewers and then having to clinch a wild card spot. But there's the T-Dog. How you doing tonight, T-Dog?
I'm doing good, J-Man. Sorry I'm a little late. We can blame our good mutual friend, Aaron Lynch. That's all I'm saying.
I blame him for a lot. So, yep.
Add it to your list.
Add it to my list. I was just talking baseball, but before I get any further into baseball, I will give you your birdie bogey to give you as much time possible to think over it.
So I can get another bogey to my resume for 2025. Great.
I did a version of this question, not a version, a similar question to Webby, Evan Webb, a few weeks ago, which the question was, can you name the top five career passing yardage leaders in Purdue history in order? So My question for you is, can you name the top five rushing leaders for a career in Purdue history in order? It's a tough one. I might be generous and give you a par, depending on what you do.
I think I can name four of the five, maybe all five, but I don't know if I can get the order. That's going to be the problem.
I think that's the hard part of the question. I think getting the names should be kind of easier anyway, I should say. Birdie or Bogey is brought to you by Arlington Public House for good cuisine, cocktails, casual atmosphere, located 703 Main Street in Rochester, Indiana.
Yeah, and I'm pulling up what they had over the weekend because I saw it. Don't remember the name of it. Let's see what it was. They had a filet Oscar. It's 8-ounce center cut filet mignon on top of a bed of crisp, fresh green beans, holiday sauce, lobster bites on it, baked potato. There you go. Looks nice. Pretty good on the video. They did one of those circular video shots of it. So, yeah.
Sounds delicious.
Yep.
But anyway, I was talking baseball before you hopped on, and I was just talking about the Cubs a little bit, how it was a mixed bag week where they swept the Pirates in three, clinched a playoff spot, and then they kind of celebrated like they won the World Series. And I was saying how that rubbed some fans the wrong way, which I understand, and I understand the celebration as well because, this group hadn't been to the playoffs together. I mean, Ian Happ hasn't played in the playoffs since 2020. Nico Horner, I don't even know if he got an at-bat in the 2020 playoffs. But then you have guys like Seiya Suzuki, obviously Pete Crow Armstrong, Michael Busch. Never played in the postseason. So it's fun to make the postseason, but why it rubbed some fans the wrong way is, you blew a 6.5 game division lead or whatever that lead was in June, and the Brewers ended up winning the Central, and then they followed it up with their worst series of the year in Cincinnati.
Getting
swept in a four-game series. I can excuse the first one, the first game of that series, just because, it was a 1-0 loss. They faced an absurdly good starting pitcher in Hunter Green. He shot him down. Okay, whatever. But then it kind of leaked over into Friday. Then it leaked over into Saturday. And then yesterday they lost 1-0 again. So two of those games in Cincinnati, they lost 1-0. Just listless. performance there. It didn't really do a whole lot for any seeding wise. I mean, they still have a healthy 3-game lead on the San Diego Padres for that top wildcard spot. So it didn't do anything in the grand scheme of things for them. It significantly helped the Cincinnati Reds, though, as they have come back from a 6-game deficit to the New York Mets on September 6th. They were down 6 games to the Mets on September 6th. And the Reds haven't really played all that great. They did this weekend, and really all week they played fairly well. I think they went 5-2 this week, or maybe even 6-1 this week. But the Mets have collapsed. Like, it's
official. I love it. I love it.
The collapse is here. And the Reds can help, or the Cubs can help the Reds out once again this week as they face the Mets for 3 games in Wrigley Field. Yeah, it's an epic collapse. I mean, the Mets had the best record in baseball for a big chunk of the first half, and now since then they've had the third worst record in baseball, and it hasn't gotten any better. They just lost 2-3 to a terrible Nationals team over the weekend at home. I know the Cubs literally just did that a couple weeks ago.
That one outfielder had 2 of the best catches I've ever seen.
Yeah,
in one game, I should say.
Yeah, well, Jacob Young, yeah, one was very, very lucky where he literally bobbled it, kicked it up,
he caught it.
And then, yeah, the most impressive one, or as far as the highest stakes one, was in the 9th inning where he robbed what looked like it could have been a game-tying homer. I'm not sure if that ball actually gets out, but at the very least, if he doesn't catch that, it's a leadoff runner at second, you know?
Right.
Or probably even third at that point. I think the ball probably caroms away and he gets to third. So that that really stung for the Mets. But they are, only 4 games over 500. The Reds have the tiebreaker over them, so the Reds technically have the last spot here this week, and they get the Pirates for 3. Then they face a Milwaukee team that really doesn't have much to play for. So I think the Reds have a very good chance to make the postseason for the first time in a real season since 2013. They did make it in 2020 and ended up getting swept by the Braves. But I don't even count that season. Mets have collapsed. Cubs need to start playing better just to hopefully enter the postseason with a little bit of momentum and clinch the top wildcard spot so they can host a 3-game series against the Padres at Wrigley Field next week. They do have some injury issues. Kyle Tucker, he hasn't played in 3 weeks now. And
are you still on board of giving him a contract extension?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I want to give him a contract extension. I don't want to give him $400 to $500 million like he'll want. He's hurt for one right now, which is maybe part of the reason why he hasn't kind of fought back to play, is because it is a contract year. He hasn't even ran yet since he hurt his calf, which is concerning considering a week from tomorrow playoffs start, and you wanted to get him some at bats before the playoffs start. Then Daniel Palencia, their closer for a majority of the year, should be back this week as well. Other than that, they're fairly healthy, and they need to get a little bit of momentum heading into playoff baseball for next week. For the first time, it'll be literally the first playoff series they play in, not 2020, don't count that, since 2017. So it's been a long time coming for the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, it's one of the first – I mean, well, we were doing the podcast in 2016, right after they won the World Series, and then 2017. But you haven't got to talk about the Cubs in the postseason too much in the history of this podcast.
2018 left a real bad taste in my mouth. Blew a 5-game NL Central lead to the Brewers, where Cubs played all right in September, but the Brewers just—I think they won 14 of their last 15—and ended up forcing the game 163, and the Brewers won a game 163 in Wrigley to win the division, and then Cubs get beat by the Colorado Rockies in extra innings. And then 2020, it was a strange season just because, I mean, everything that was going on. 60-game season. Cubs started that year 13-3. And then I think their final record was 34-26. So if they played that full 162 games, I don't think that team even makes playoffs at that point. And they just happened to get in. End up getting swept by the Marlins. I think they scored one run in 2 games against the Marlins. I didn't watch a single second of it because they were on at like 1:30 in the afternoon and I was working. So it didn't even feel like playoff baseball. So it'll be fun regardless of where they're playing. Hopefully it's at Wrigley Field because they've played very well at home this year. And Wrigley in the playoffs is unmatched. But even if they do have to go to San Diego, it'll be a really good atmosphere.
So putting you on the spot, how does the the playoff race shake up? I mean, how does it finish?
Believe it or not, no American League team until yesterday had clinched a playoff spot yet, until the Blue Jays did. I think depending on what happens, I could see hopefully the Cubs don't fold this week, but at the same time, I don't want the Reds in the playoffs because I hate the Reds. But I think where it's set right now is where it ends up. What happens at the end of the season, where the standings end up in the National League anyway. Arizona's only a game behind the Cincinnati Reds and the New York Mets, but I think the Reds get that final spot. I think the Cubs do enough to
Let them get hot, Jay, man. I know they shouldn't, but, oh, man, could you imagine?
That would be miserable. They have the pitching to make some noise, especially in a three-game series. They'd likely go to L.A. You know, to face the Dodgers. But they have the pitching to win two out of three in LA. So they're a dangerous team heading into the postseason. But I think the Reds get that final spot. I think the Cubs get the top wild card spot. And then in the American League, it is a great race. Remember when the Tigers were up 13 games on the Cleveland Guardians? Yeah, that lead is down to one game with a week remaining. And Cleveland now has the final wild card spot as well. Where the Houston Astros would not be in the playoffs if the season ended today, which would be okay with me. I'm sick of them.
Really, it's pretty impressive what Cleveland's done. And I'm not saying they've made the playoffs all these years, but dating back the last decade with what their roster looks like on paper, with what they've done some of those years, it's pretty darn impressive.
Yeah, I saw a tweet today. It was like their lineup's always like Jose Ramirez and a bunch of schmohawks or something like that. and they just win. They win ball games. It is impressive. And I'm sure Detroit's in an unenviable position because they have not played very good here the past month and a half. And Cleveland's right there, right on their heels. That is a really the entire American League still a very good race. The Blue Jays have a two-game lead on the Yankees. Of course, Tigers are a game up on Cleveland, and then Seattle is three up on Houston. Seattle's won 14 of their last 15. They are the hottest team in baseball, have the second-best record in the American League now. But then you look at the National League, Phillies have it clinched already. Brewers have the Central clinched already, and they have a three-game lead for home field advantage. And then Dodgers have a three-game lead over the Padres with just six games remaining or so. So the National League's pretty much set in stone, but the American League is kind of wide open right now. So should be a real fun week of baseball. Brewers still have an outside shot to get to 100 wins, but I highly doubt that happens. And then the playoffs is a crapshoot, but I think this is as wide open of a postseason as we could possibly get. Because the Dodgers don't look all-worldly like they have. Brewers, very beatable. I think the Phillies are the best team in the National League right now. Then the American League is wide, wide, wide open. So it'll be fun to watch it play out.
I'm trying to look up who... Well, I'm going to bring both of ours up if I can find it real quick. Our predictions for the MLB season since we're in the final week. Yep, got them right here. All right. So... Well, shoot, that was last year's. I don't even know if I made a graphic for this year's now. doesn't look like I did. So, yes, I did. Yes, I did. I found one graphic. I had in the American League, I had the Yankees, the Orioles, the Tigers, the Royals, the Rangers, and the A's.
Yikes.
Yeah, struck out on a lot of those. My goodness. National League had the Braves, Phillies, Cubs, Brewers, Dodgers, Diamondbacks.
Dodgers
beating the Rangers in the World Series.
Rangers are not going to make the playoffs.
Yikes. Let's see what J-Man had here. Where is it at?
Might have kept mine here if you can't find it.
Yeah, I'm finding my 2024 graphic for you, but I'm not finding it.
I got pulled up. I had in the American League, I had the Orioles, Yankees, Royals, Guardians, Rangers, Mariners. So that was terrible.
A little better mine, though.
No, you had the Tigers in it. I didn't.
By the Royals as well. And I had the A's and the Rangers.
Yeah. And then I had the Braves, Phillies, Cubs, Dodgers, Diamondbacks, and Padres in the National League. So that's still pretty bad. Braves stunk. Diamondbacks have an outside shot to make it still. Not great, though. Then my National League MVP was Juan Soto. I think it'll be Shohei again. My AL MVP was Bobby Witt Jr. I think it should be Aaron Judge, but it could be Kyle Raleigh as well. I mean, he's broke the Mariners record, shattered the catcher record home run. He still has an outside shot to even get to Judge's American League record. He has 58 homers right now, so that could be interesting. National League Cy Young, I had Paul Skenes. He'll win it for sure. AL Cy Young, I had Cole Reagans. I have no idea.
I did too.
It would be a possibility to win it in the American League. I haven't followed the American League all that well this year. And then my rookie of the years, neither guy will win it. I had Roki Sasaki, who I don't think's pitched since April, and Jackson Jobe for the Tigers. I don't remember hearing his name much this year. So
my AL MVP was Aaron Judge. My NL MVP was LA De La Cruz.
Okay, yeah. And Judge probably should win it. LA De La Cruz hit his first homer since like July the other night, so he probably will not even.
Is it true the Reds don't have anybody over 20 home runs?
No, that's untrue. Their first baseman. Why can't I think of their first baseman's name? Oh, Spencer. I'm gonna look it up.
I can't help you here.
Steer is his last name. That's all I know. He had about 7 homers over the weekend. It is Spencer Steer, and he's up to 21. LA De La Cruz hit his 20th. So they
have one guy. 20.
Entering the weekend, they didn't have anyone with 20. Wow. And now they have 2 guys with 20.
Wow.
Yeah, but I did get one of my bold predictions for the year right today. I said one prominent college basketball coach will step down.
You did?
I got lucky because I didn't think that was going to happen as Bruce Pearl has decided to retire.
So. Yeah, now the interesting thing is the whole roster has a 30-day window. They can leave if they want to, and the season tips off in 42 days. So.
Yeah, put him in a bad spot, which is just like Tony Bennett last year. But I'm good riddance to Bruce Pearl. He's the scummiest of scum you could possibly get.
It's just interesting because, like, Field of 68 reported this afternoon, he's been thinking about this all offseason.
Why not do it in April?
Like, you get this close to it, just go one more year.
Yeah, damn. I'm with you.
I mean, he did his team wrong, his school wrong, and it'll be interesting. Purdue plays them in Indianapolis in Indy Classic this year, and I'm interested to see what that matchup's going to look like now. It's probably a lot different than Laguna.
His son's taking over, his 38-year-old son.
That never ends well.
He didn't even get into coaching until 2017. He worked in, like, finance or something until his dad hired him. So, that's going to be – that's pretty stupid. But good riddance to one of the least likable coaches in college basketball. Yep. Good coach. But very unlikable. So.
Yep. It's funny, you know, some of these coaches getting out now when the rules are fair for everybody to do what they've been doing for years.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Especially for him.
Yep.
Not to do that. He got Tennessee in trouble and lied to investigators about that. He secretly recorded a phone call with Deion Thomas and accused Illinois of cheating, where the NCAA found zero evidence of it happening, but still put them on. They didn't put them on probation, but the rumors kept them from getting like a guy like LaPhonso Ellis was one. They would have gotten LaPhonso Ellis. Konzo Martin, I think, was another guy that they had a real good shot to get. But the allegations that Bruce Pearl drummed up back in the 90s hurt them. So a lot of Illinois fans can't stand him. That was before my time.
He was wrapped up in something with the Aaron Kraft recruitment too.
Yeah. What was it? Like a cookout or something? There was some sort of cookout.
Yeah.
Now that the playing field's a little level, he's done a really good job, even with the playing field level.
Sure.
But it makes it probably more difficult for him.
Yep.
He's older.
Last year was their team to do something with it. So.
Yep. Yep, so he'll retire as a zero-time national champion.
Yep, got to a Final Four, but
hopefully Kelvin Sampson's next.
Daryl Love on Facebook, Dabo to ND.
I hope so. Question mark. That'd be hilarious.
I think Marcus Freeman would have to leave and go somewhere else first.
Yeah, I'd take Freeman over Dabo in a heartbeat.
Here's the thing with that. He is very annoying, Dabo. I still think he's a good football coach. And like, who could Clemson get better? That's what I'm wondering.
Kurt Cignetti.
I don't see Cignetti winning the national title at Clemson.
I don't either. I just want him out of the Big Ten. I can't stand him.
Yeah, if he got away from Indiana, that would be fantastic for Purdue because he's going to be pain in their side forever, even though he's getting older. No, Cignetti's a very good coach. He's just very unlikable outside of Indiana. I don't know too many fan bases that like him at all.
Yeah.
He never looks happy. Never looks happy.
He wins, though. And he can't really say anything else. He wins.
Yeah, but
Dabo to Notre Dame would be hilarious. Which again, I mean, I don't think Freeman's getting fired. I think they win out probably.
Let me put it this way: if Dabo's available, he's gonna have a job later that day, somewhere.
Yeah, somebody will hire him. I have a hard time believing Clemson.
Florida would hire him like that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Alabama might hire him like that.
Yeah, at this point, yeah. Yeah, Clemson's off to a bad start after
they are.
Coming into the year ranked in the top.
I mean, right? 1-3. Yeah, 1-3. That was my dad's national title pick when he filled in 1 week.
They got whooped at home by a Syracuse team they shouldn't be getting whooped by. So,
even though I like Fred Brown, I've been on the record on here saying I like Fred Brown, man.
I think you'd still say Clemson should not be getting smacked at home by Syracuse.
And I could see Notre Dame winning out to your point. We'll just get right into college football since we're kind of dabbling around it, but I could see Notre Dame winning out. They're still got, I mean, at Arkansas this weekend, they should win. They're 6.5-point favorites. Boise State won't be real easy at home, but they should win that. And then USC will be a big test. But other than that, they should. But then it gets into the consideration. Like, I think a 10-2 Notre Dame team gets in, but it probably depends on what else is going on around the whole national landscape, but a 10-2 Notre Dame team probably gets a nod over any other 10-2 team, I would think.
But that 10-2 team's best win is probably a USC team that I think will be 8-4 or 9-3 at the end of the year. I mean, they had opportunities, obviously, against Miami and Texas A&M. Couldn't find a way to get it done. I think a 10-2 anyone else doesn't even get consideration.
Probably not.
Maybe an Alabama or Georgia would get consideration, or an LSU.
Ohio State.
Ohio State at 10-2 would definitely get consideration. But the fact that they're Notre Dame, I think they'd absolutely get at least talked about. I don't know if they'd actually get in. I think you got to go at least 11-1 if you're not going to have a conference title appearance, game appearance, which they can't play in one because they aren't not in a conference. But
And watching Notre Dame in full like it did on Saturday when they beat Purdue 56-30. And I'm not just saying this because Purdue's defense was really bad. I mean, I would have said this after the first two games, too. Their offense isn't their problem. No. It's totally their defense.
Yeah.
Their defensive backs are not very good for Notre Dame standards, which is weird because a lot of their defensive backs are returning guys from last year's team. So it's just kind of strange.
I wonder if it's a different I don't know if it's a different scheme because their defensive coordinator left to take the Bengals job, right?
Correct. Al Golden left. Chris Ash, former Rutgers coach, is their DC, and he's not well liked up at South Bend. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, it's been a struggle so far because they were good defensively last year.
They've been good, the last 5 years, I'd say?
Yeah,
5 to 10 years, they've been pretty darn good. And last year, they were number two defense in the country last year, I believe.
Yeah.
So, I think they gave up like 12 points per game last year.
Yeah, they got to clean some stuff up because, Purdue torched them. A&M, for the most part, got them pretty good. Miami got them pretty good, too.
Yep.
Because
if they don't tighten that up, somebody else has got to get them. Many games to keep going.
This team's not going to be easy this week at Arkansas. I don't think Arkansas is very good, but it is on the road.
No, they're 2-2, and they lost to Memphis this past week. Pittman's seat is pretty hot. Well, did you see how they lost that game at the end?
I saw they blew a lead. I don't remember how they lost it, though.
They got the ball back. Were well in field goal range. I mean, like red zone. And they were trying to just run a few more plays to run the clock down. The running back fumbled.
I didn't see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would have been a chip shot field goal.
Chip shot. Yep. Yep. So. But no, I was – it's weird to – I mean, I think Purdue's got some problems defensively. They definitely got straightened out before they play Illinois next Saturday. They have a bye this week. I mean, I am so glad they probably don't have to play Jeremiah Love, Jadeveon Price ever again. Those two are just Purdue killers. They get to the outside, they're gone. Purdue cannot set the edge. That's still what they struggled with that last year. They're struggling with that again this year. They finally forced their first turnover of the year in a strip sack, CJ Carr, right before the weather delay came in, which I'm getting sick of that. 2 weeks in a row, weather delays. They can stop that. But I like what I've seen from Purdue's offense the first 4 weeks. If they can keep that up, I think they'll win a few more games here the rest of the way. But they gotta be able to run it a little bit. I should say I like what I've seen from the passing offense. Mm-hmm. The running offense, there's a lot left to be desired. They got to get that going. But they're right where I thought they'd be, 2-2 after 4 weeks. So
yeah, and I said it last week. They faced two really hard opponents, but they hung in there. Right. They got down big against Notre Dame later on.
Third quarter was disastrous. 21-0 third quarter.
Yeah, they hung in there by half. Mm-hmm. Which last year I think it was what 42-0
at half last year. This year they were down by 12 at half. So
so baby steps. But Ryan Brown's a lot better than Hudson Card was.
And Hudson Card had nothing around him either, and horrible coaching. Yep. So yeah. Indiana took it to Illinois.
Did they ever.
I mean, going into the game, I'll be honest, I picked Illinois to win. I put a money line bet on Illinois, but I knew there was a good chance Indiana was going to win, but I would have never guessed it was going to be by the deficit it was.
Yeah. That's why I haven't believed in Illinois as a top 10 team. I haven't believed in them as a playoff team. That's why I think we both had them 8-4, which I think is still a very attainable goal. I mean, their schedule's it's not easy, but there's zero excuse not to get to 8-4 this season. But it was pretty embarrassing for them. They get block punt touchdown. It really kind of opened up the game, set the tone. Then they tied it, but then it was just mm-hmm. And they couldn't stop Indiana. I think Mendoza threw for 5 touchdowns.
He's pretty good.
Illinois was banged up in the secondary, but there's no excuse. They couldn't get any pressure. I think they gave up 7 sacks too for an offensive line that got every single player returning from last year. But yeah, this Illinois team, I haven't believed in them. You know that.
Yes.
And a lot of the reason was they went 5-1 in 1 score games last year. They won by 1 against a Purdue team that won 1 game.
Historically bad Purdue team.
Yeah. They won by 3 against a trash Kansas team. They lost at home to a mediocre Minnesota team. They had a miracle win at Rutgers on a, 4th and forever. They score a touchdown on it with 6 seconds left. South Carolina was playing down a bunch of guys in the bowl game. They even struggled against Northwestern at Wrigley, and they pulled away late. So I just didn't believe the hype of a top 12 team that they were coming into the season. Now an 8-win Illinois team would be one of the greatest teams in the history of the sport. But the expectations coming in, which I think Illinois fans are stupid for having such lofty expectations after having such a bad history. Guys are jumping off the bandwagon. It's kind of funny. They're selling tickets, and I hate the Illinois football fan base with a passion.
They got a big one this weekend, hosting USC, who's number 21 in the country, because Illinois still ranked 23rd. They fell from 9th to 23rd, but yeah, this is a big one. But last I checked, USC's favored.
Yeah, in this game. I think it was 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
Last I saw it, yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how Illinois comes out. After getting embarrassed, you think it'd help them,
locked in,
fired up for them, locked in. USC, 9 a.m. start time, local start time for them.
Yeah, they suck at those. They are not good at those.
That'll be interesting to see how they are as well. But USC has a lot more talent than Illinois does, top to bottom. But you would think the atmosphere would be great. It's the Fox Big Noon kickoff game. Right. Which is the first time they've come to Illinois. And it'll be fun to see how they respond. I'm sure Bielema's on them pretty good.
Did you have any other takeaways around the Big Ten, around the country, that you wanted to discuss?
trying to think what else happened. I didn't watch a ton of college
football. Michigan, good Michigan, win for Michigan yeah. going into Nebraska. Kind of shut yeah. up everybody with the hype in Nebraska for a little bit.
I'm very happy for that. Nebraska's the same as they ever were. Can't win a one-score game to save their lives. And credit Michigan, too, because after getting embarrassed by Oklahoma a couple weeks ago, they've really bounced back, and Underwood's looked pretty good here, especially at Nebraska. It's a tough place to play.
Mm-hmm.
Iowa won an actual, like, shootout. It was weird to see Iowa win a shootout at Rutgers. They scored over 30 points. Mm-hmm. It's the last time they scored 30 points against a Big Ten team. It's been a minute, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But not a ton of games were really played over the weekend, Big Ten-wise. There's a lot of buys. There's a lot of buys this week, too.
And nationally, I think there's already some coaches in trouble. I think that was my big takeaway. Mike Gundy, even though his buyout pretty darn big, but they'll get the money. It's time. It's time for both parties. This is an Oklahoma State team with the old Big 12 when Oklahoma and Texas were still there. They were in the mix year in, year out.
Yeah,
they leave. These new teams come in, and one thing everybody was saying right when these new teams come in is like, this is Oklahoma State's conference now.
Yeah. I mean, 3-9 last year were they? Now they're getting beat fairly handily at home to Tulsa, and Tulsa's not a good group of five either.
No.
So, it's time. It was probably 2 years ago. Was probably time because they came into the year ranked fairly high last year. Remember,
Ollie Gordon was getting Heisman.
Yeah, right. And then the DUI he had right before the season kind of tanked their entire season. So, and this year it's looking ugly. They gave up 60-something to Oregon a few weeks ago, lose at home to Tulsa. Like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Napier, I mean, of course, he didn't get fired after the Miami game, but I know a lot of people keep circling at Mississippi State as one to where if they lose – it could be bye-bye already.
They were another one, kind of like Illinois, I never really bought because they got hot at the end of the year, and so they had hype coming into the year this year. I think it's time. They should have never left, or they should have never fired Dan Mullen because he's doing a pretty good job at UNLV now.
4-0, yeah.
And he had good success at Florida, but they were still kind of in that mindset, we got to win be in contention for a national title every single year. And so you fire a guy, and then your expectations get lower. Okay, we're keeping this guy. He's get us to 8 wins, and now kind of expectations are recalibrated, kind of like they did in Nebraska.
So Florida's 1-3. They have a bye week this week. Their upcoming schedule's Texas at home, at Texas A&M, Mississippi State at home. So my apologies there. I thought it was in Starksville. Georgia at home.
Yeah.
At Kentucky, at Ole Miss. Tennessee at home, Florida State at home. I see maybe 2 wins.
I was just about to say maybe 2.
Maybe 3-9.
Yeah, 2-10 or 3-9, I think is probably most likely in the swamp. I don't know where they go from here either, though. I don't know.
Yeah, crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. But the other takeaway I had, I was real impressed with Texas Tech.
Yes, that was a good win.
Utah was so loud. Texas Tech had 6 false starts, but they still won pretty easily.
Found a way to win, yeah.
So, yeah, true. Yeah, so good slate of games this week, though, across the country. Let's do our Big Ten picks and confidence, starting with that ranked top 25 matchup we talked about earlier, number 21 USC at number 23 Illinois. And USC is a 6.5-point favorite.
I saw it bumped up. Give me USC for 2.
I got the Trojans for 3. I think it'll be a good game. Ultimately, I think USC is just a little more talented.
Yeah, definitely.
Rutgers at Minnesota. Noon kickoff here. Minnesota's a 5.5-point favorite. Big one for both teams already, even though Rutgers is 3-1, Minnesota's 2-1. Because both these teams could kind of start a skid if
this one. Give me Minnesota for 3, just the home team.
I got Minnesota for 5, just because there's only 6 games we're picking, and it's just kind of the way it fell for me this week. So, number 11, Indiana, 7.5-point favorites at Iowa, 3:30 on Peacock.
Give me Indiana for 5.
I got Indiana for 2. I think they are a better team than Iowa. But Iowa's good defensively. They're good at special teams. This could be Indiana's toughest road game, excluding Ohio State last year, that they've played in quite some time. So,
yeah, I just don't know if Iowa can score enough points.
I don't know when the last time Indiana's won on the road against a team with a winning record. Unless Michigan State had a winning record at the time they played them last year, but Michigan State ended up with a losing record on the year. But I don't know what their record was at the time when they played at Michigan State last year. So, yeah. Either way, it's been a little while.
Yeah.
So, because Tom Allen didn't do much winning the last few years there. No. So, number one, Ohio State at Washington. Ohio State's a 9.5-point favorite.
Give me Ohio State for 6.
I got the Buckeyes for 6 as well. I mean, I think Washington's good, but Ohio State's on a different level.
Yeah.
Yep. UCLA with a new interim head coach at Northwestern. Northwestern's a 6.5-point favorite.
Give me Northwestern for 1, just because they're at home. And UCLA stinks.
I got Northwestern for 4. I don't think I'd pick Northwestern to beat any other Big Ten team, but I don't think UCLA's going to win a game.
Nope.
In one of the top games, if not the top game, all college football this weekend, number 6, Oregon, at number 3, Penn State, who's a 3.5-point favorite.
How many times can we say James Franklin has to win these kind of games eventually, right? This will be the J-Man's book of prediction of the week. He will not. Oregon will go into Penn State, into Happy Valley, and beat Penn State. I have Oregon for 4 points. J-Man's book of prediction of the week is brought to you by Travis Watchering Insurance Agency for life, home, auto, business, renters, workers' comp, and farm insurance. Contact Travis 219-869-4561.
Book it. I was back and forth on this because I could definitely see Oregon winning the national championship this year, and I think a loss here doesn't take them out of that conversation. But I think it's finally James Franklin's time to get one of these, but I'm only taking Pitt State for 1.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be a really good game. Moore's playing good. Drew Aller's off to a good start this year. It should be a fun one. Should be quite an atmosphere there in Happy Valley.
Definitely, yeah.
For sure. Elsewhere around the country, top 25 action. We got 2 top 25 teams in action Friday night. Number 8, Florida State's at 3-1 Virginia. Ooh. Florida State's a 6.5-point favorite.
What a turnaround for Florida State from last year. I mean, that was unbelievably bad for them. So, but give me Florida State on the road.
I like Florida State as well. They already have 3 wins this year. Last year they had 2.
Yeah.
So, number 24, TCU travels to 3-1 Arizona State, who's a 2.5-point favorite.
Give me Arizona State just because they're at home.
I'm taking them as well. They were both our preseason Big 12 champions after making the college football playoff last year. They lost at Mississippi State earlier this year, but I think they get it done here. Number 16, Georgia Tech. 4-0, 13.5-point favorites at 2-1 Wake Forest.
I'll give me Georgia Tech. Wake Forest is bad.
I think Georgia Tech rolls in that one. Number 22, Notre Dame, 4.5-point favorites at 2-2 Arkansas. Rare noon game for the Irish.
Give me Notre Dame. I think they handle it
pretty easily. I think Notre Dame, yep, same here. Really good one down here in the SEC. 4-0, number 4, LSU at 4-0. Number 13, Ole Miss, who is a 1.5-point favorite.
Give me Brian Kelly and the boys. Give me LSU and a slight upset.
I'm going to take Lane Kiffin just to disagree with you. Just to disagree with you. Auburn, who fell out of the rankings 3-1 at number 9, 3-0 Texas A&M, who's a 6.5-point favorite.
Give me A&M.
I like A&M as well. Number 15, Tennessee, 3-1 at 4-0 Mississippi State. Talk about a team that's improved.
Yeah,
they won 4 games last year.
No. What's the line on that one?
7.5 for Tennessee.
Yeah, give me Tennessee. This is a real big test. I know Mississippi State beat Arizona State at home a few weeks ago, and this is a measuring stick game for Mississippi State. So give me Tennessee.
I'm taking Tennessee, but Mississippi State covers. This is a close one, I think. Number 17, Alabama at number 5, Georgia is 2.5-point favorites. Man, this slate of games is great.
It's a good week. Good week. Finally, because the first couple weeks kind of boring. Not boring, but we don't really have great matchups. Give me Georgia at home.
I'm taking the Georgia Bulldogs as well. And number 25, BYU, who's 3-0, travels to Boulder to play 2-2 Colorado. BYU is a 6.5-point favorite.
Give me Brigham Young.
I think Brigham Young makes Dion and the boys go to 2-3.
Yep.
So, real quick, One thing I wanted to ask you was, my dad asked me this question earlier and got me thinking. He asked us to name our second favorite teams in each sport.
All right.
So I thought that'd be interesting. My easy cop out is whoever's playing my team's rivals. But
yeah,
that's a cop-out answer. Yep, so I'll actually try to give my second favorite team.
That's a tough one because I've never really thought about having a second favorite team. Teams, I'm going to think teams that I don't dislike.
How about that?
Man. Let's start with baseball.
Colorado Rockies for me.
Yeah, I figured.
Embarrassingly enough.
Favorite baseball team. I hate them all. I hate the Cubs most of the time too. I'm gonna go with the Seattle Mariners.
I like it. Yeah. I like it. How about the NFL?
Ah, I got it. That's a tough one.
It is a tough one because I hate most teams.
I hate them all.
I hate them all.
What's a team that I like to watch that I don't hate? Is there one? I don't know. There's definitely not a team in the AFC I like to watch that I don't mind the LA Chargers, actually. I'm not just saying that either. NFC, I hate the NFC North. I hate the NFC East. NFC South, is there anyone in the NFC South? Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
That's like exactly who I was going to pick because of Baker.
I like Baker Mayfield, yeah.
It used to be the Saints for me when Drew Brees was playing. Now they just stink. Yeah, I like Baker. I think a lot of people would expect me to pick the Niners because of Kyle Shanahan, but I'm a big Baker fan.
Since the
Browns drafted them.
Yeah.
So Thad Moody said Purdue and whoever beats IU are the only favorites.
Yeah.
And I love Daryl loves it's your Packers. It's his wife's a Bears fan. Fan, so love that. Love that. NBA, I guess I'll say the Nuggets because I consider myself a Pacers fan, but I don't really care about the NBA very much.
I'm not even going to answer that one. I don't even have a favorite team, really.
College football.
College football favorite. I hate all the Big Ten teams. I hate all the SEC teams. There's not really a team. Miami. What am I talking about? It's McCain. Yeah, Miami. Actually, that's my number one. What am I talking about? Maybe Illinois is my second favorite.
I really have never, ever thought who my second favorite college football team is. So, you know, I've been saying I love this guy. I'm going to jump on the Syracuse bandwagon. Fred Brown.
There you go.
And then college basketball.
None of them. That's a harder one because I'm a much bigger college basketball fan than I am a football fan.
I used to root for Michael Shrewsbury, but now he's at Notre Dame. I don't root for Notre Dame.
You kind of like Duke a little bit back in the day.
I've never hated Duke. I used to own a Duke shirt. I'll go with Missouri State because Konzo Martin's there.
Okay. Man, I'm trying to think of teams that have
Illinois State. That's your wife's alma mater.
Yeah, I don't really follow them.
I know you don't have to follow them.
That's fair. I can't.
Gonzaga?
No, they've beaten Illinois too much. Illinois play them a bunch. It feels like. Is there anyone on the West Coast I don't hate?
Well, now they're all part of the Big Ten anymore.
That is a good point. Let's go with Utah State. I've always liked watching Utah State. They bomb the three ball.
I about said Danny Sprinkle, but he's the coach of Washington. So yeah,
he was at Utah State.
Yep. So good stuff. But we need to do On This Day and blind rankings before we get to our NFL picks.
I have On This Day pulled up here real quick. On this day in 1920, a Chicago grand jury convenes to investigate charges that 8 White Sox players conspired to fix the 1919 World Series.
Way to go, Shoeless Joe.
Yeah, if he bet, he did a hard time. It was tough to really decipher that he actually did bet because he hit over 300 in that series.
And one of the hardest autographs to get because the guy couldn't write.
On this day in 1957, Duke Snyder's 39th and 40th home runs are the last hit at Ebbets Field in Brooklyn.
That's a good one.
On this day in 1966, only 413 people showed up at Yankee Stadium for a Yankees game.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, the Reds had such a good series that they're now, you know, in the last playoff spot, but you wouldn't have been able to tell by how few Cincinnati Reds fans were there over the weekend. On this day in 1969, San Francisco Giant Willie Mays became the second player to hit 600 homers.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good. Pretty good little ball player. On this day in 1985, Billy Martin's right arm is broken by pitcher Ed Whitson.
Billy Martin is just something else, man. That guy.
Yeah. On this day in 1987, Red Sox Wade Boggs tied the AL record of 200 hits for five consecutive seasons.
Another good one.
87 NFL players go on strike for 24 days, hence the replacements.
Shane Falco, baby.
On this day in 1991, Miami Dolphins coach Don Shula recorded his 300th career NFL victory.
Shula, one of the greats.
On this day in 93, Rangers pitcher Nolan Ryan pitched his last game. He was 46 years old.
Yeah, he was on Honest Day last week for getting his number, his jersey number 34, retired by the Rangers.
On this day in 2004, Barry Bonds was intentionally walked four times in a nine-inning game.
That'd be so frustrating for the guy.
Yeah, yeah. So that'll do it for On This Day this week.
And the Honest Day is brought to you by, like as every week, Mooney Wood and Laser Crafts. Mooney Wood and Laser Crafts is a veteran-owned and operated woodcraft shop based out of Texas with Indiana grassroots. They provide 100% hand-cut custom designs to fit your needs, and their pieces are a great addition to any home, office, or man cave. You can see some of their recently completed projects by visiting them at Mooney Wood Crafts on Instagram and on Facebook. It's actually at Mooney Wood Laser Crafts. And if you let them know the Tan and J-Man Show sent you, you get 15% off your first order. So get your orders in, whether you want a wooden sign, growth chart, a patch for your hat, tumblers. Thad's doing awesome work on his tumblers. And he's got a website, MooneyWoodAndLaserCrafts.com, that you can go check out everything he's making. So keeps adding more and more. So tell them the Tan and J-Man Show sent you for 15% off your first order. And one note, I was hoping it was going to be in the Honest Day somewhere. This is Ryder Cup week this week at Bethpage Black between the U.S. and Europe, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I don't want to sound anti-American, but if I had a pick, I think Europe wins it yet again.
Book it?
Yeah, I'll book it. I hope I'm wrong, but I'll book it. I just think their team's better on paper. So
that's fair.
That's why they play it. So it'll be a rowdy crowd up in New York, though. It'll be fun to watch. So, and my blind rankings has to do with NFL this week. So before we get into a recap, winners, losers, and picking week four, we'll go through this real fast. The Miami Dolphins next week on week five play on Monday Night Football, as do my Denver Broncos. Dolphins play 7:15. Yeah. Broncos play 8:15. Dolphins are on ESPN. Broncos are on ABC. Don't know who's going to get Buck and Aikman. Well, else going to get Orlovsky. I don't know who's going to get what there. But anyways, I looked up five times the Dolphins have been on Monday Night Football since the early 2000s and have lost. Oh. And have lost.
Yeah.
And you got to rank these on, if you can remember, how mad you were after the game.
All right.
So I tried to find five of them that were pretty close because they've been on Monday Night Football quite a bit.
Not this century, but I think all time they're number one or number two in most Monday Night Football appearances.
We will start off with this 2013 loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at Tampa by a score 22-19.
Do I remember this one? I'm going to go with two. I was so unbelievably mad after this game because this was a Joe Philbin team, and that was a terrible Tampa Bay team. Like, I think Dolphins came in, they were over 500, and Tampa Bay was 2-10 or something like that.
Was Freeman their quarterback? Or Mike Glennon or somebody?
I don't remember that it was Freeman. I was so mad because the Dolphins should have won that game. Rishard Matthews had a breakout game. He'd done nothing his entire career. Then he had like 150 yards receiving that game because I think they had an injury.
Mike Glennon threw for 139 yards.
Yeah. That was what were the records of the teams that day?
Tampa Bay. I don't know if this was after the game or going in. This was after. That was Tampa Bay's first win of the year.
Dolphins
fell to 4-5.
Yeah, so Dolphins were 4-4. I guess they weren't over 500. For some reason, I thought it was later in the season.
Tampa was 1-8 after that game.
But they panned to the box where Stephen Ross and his cronies and Jason Taylor was there, and Jason Taylor looked like he wanted to jump off a bridge, and Stephen Ross was smiling and laughing, having a good old time, and so that made me real mad. I wanted Philbin gone after that one.
At Pittsburgh, 3-0, 2007.
Oh man, mad wise, so
3-0.
My dad had just bought a brand new TV. It was our first high definition TV, and it was the first game we ever watched in high definition. That's what I remember from this game. The game was 3-0 because they got torrential downpours, and for some reason, 2 days before that, they decided to resod the field. Guys couldn't run. Guys could not run. And so it was torrential downpour. There was a punt, very famous punt. Brandon Fields punted it, and it landed and just stuck in the turf. I'm going to put that one at 4 because okay. I wasn't – John Beck started that game for the Dolphins, so that was not a very – enjoyable Dolphins team to begin with.
At home, lost to the Colts 27-23 in 2009.
One.
A feeling.
Yeah, because I had to go and face Connor Thompson and Cameron Screeton at school the next day after talking a lot of trash.
That's a Peyton Manning. That's a Peyton Manning Colts.
And that was my hatred was at a completely different level for those Colts teams than it ever was for any team ever. Dolphins should have won. Ted Ginn dropped a touchdown late. That would have given them the lead. The Dolphins led the whole game, and then Peyton Manning did what Peyton Manning does, and he scores late.
I'm really glad you have good memories of this game, because I was a little nervous making this list if you'd have a good memory or a good memory of the games, but you do. So, at home, lost to the New York Giants 31-24 in 2015.
5. I don't remember much from that game except Lamar Miller was running in for a touchdown, not running in for a touchdown, but he was at like the 10 and some guy for the Giants came and just booted the ball out of his arms and it went out of the end zone for a touchback or something. Or they probably would have won that game or at least tied it. But I don't remember much from that one. So 5.
So this last one's going in your 3 slot. It's at home loss to the Titans 28-27, 2023.
All right. I wish I could have put that one at number 1. Dolphins haven't been the same since that game. They came into that game. I was thinking Super Bowl.
That was in December.
Yeah. Super Bowl good. And then they lose the next couple and end up losing the division to the Bills. I would move 1 and 2 back a spot and put that one at number 1. Cause I was upset about that one.
That's fair.
And again, they haven't been the same since. So.
And that is this week's Blind Ranking segment, which is brought to you by, like it is every week, Performer Print 2 Promo Group. If you're looking for a trustworthy, dependable resource for next trade show, company picnic, or a sales meeting, Performer Print 2 Promo Group has over 50 years combined experience in promotional products and commercial print. They strive for fast and efficient response to all your print needs, so you need to look no further. Let them be your one-source print and promotional company today by giving Barbara Van Weinsberg a call at 574-210-3815.
3 winners, 3 losers. Who's your first winner?
My first winner. I don't know how many times I'm going to be able to say this. So the Cleveland Browns down 10-0, block a chip shot field goal by Brandon McManus, hit a 55-yarder. Joe Flacco does it 13-10 over the Packers, which I was in the camp that I thought the Packers were up in the top 3 teams in the league. And
now
I'm backpedaling a little bit.
Seattle Seahawks are one of my winners. They just shellacked, in my opinion, the worst team in the NFL, and that's the New Orleans Saints. Seahawks look like the best team in the West so far.
Yeah, they're good. They're good. Sam Darnold's playing good football.
Yeah.
They're looking good. My next winner is going to be the Carolina Panthers. Yeah. I was talking a bunch of trash about them. They lost to their starting offensive lineman last week. I'm like, they stink. I think the Falcons for 11 or 12 confident points. 30-0 win at home made Michael Penix Jr. look terrible.
Yeah. Penix is 0-4 in games where his opponent scores at least 7 points. That's not a recipe for success there. My next winner is the Washington Commanders. Scored 41 points without Jaden Daniels yesterday. Marcus Mariota started that game, so.
In my last winner, I got to put them in the winners category because I've been hard on them this season. Yeah. Chicago Bears win at home 31-14 over their former head coach, who's now the defense coordinator, and Matt Eberflus down there in Dallas. Dallas has a lot of problems after three games.
Yes, they do.
And Caleb and the offense look good.
They did. Tampa Bay is my last winner because they're my second favorite team in the NFL. They're 3-0, so look pretty good.
First loser. I'll let you start off the loser.
LA Rams, up 27-6 in Philadelphia in the third quarter. Let the Eagles come all the way back, take a 1-point lead, and then had a fairly easy field goal to win it. And it gets blocked and returned for a touchdown. So a massive missed opportunity for LA.
I'm going with the Cincinnati Bengals. Yep. I know they have Jake Browning, but you're against Carson Wentz. You get beat by 38 points. Bengal fans, I feel bad for you. Your season's over. Already.
Yep, it is.
It was looking like it was going to be a pretty promising year after two weeks. Nope.
New England Patriots lose by 7 at home. I never thought the Patriots were good, even though they beat the Dolphins last weekend. Had 2 turnovers in the red zone, including 1 fumbled on the half-yard line, diving into the end zone, and you lose by 7.
Yeah. My next loser, Houston Texans. Houston, yes. We have a problem. It's time to panic.
Definitely. Yes. CJ Stroud, everyone crowned him after year one, and he has not been very good the past 2 years.
Nope.
My last loser here is the Green Bay Packers. Again, we were talking about them as being, you know, a top 3 team in the NFL, and Jordan Love threw a terrible pick with about 3 minutes left deep in his own territory that led to the Browns tie in the game, and it was a bad loss for him.
My last loser here. I'm going to go with the Arizona Cardinals. I don't know why. I just feel like that's a game they really need to win to be taken seriously.
Mac Jones. Yeah.
I mean, they didn't play bad, but they lost 16-15. I mean, Bosa goes out, so that's a big defensive threat. You still can't figure out a way to produce a lot of yards and points against the Niners defense. So I almost put the Broncos in that category, but I just don't really want to talk about them very much. So.
I've been in that exact same position where I want to put the Dolphins in the loser category, but I just don't want to even mention them.
Back-to-back game winning, back-to-back games losing on walk-off field goals just gives That's me rough. More gray hair. I was more ticked off after the Colts loss, more frustrated with this one yesterday because this one's could have some implications because it's a division rival. So, is Williams a bust? Plays Cowboys, balls out like he's on all pro, and the Cowboys are on beginner mode.
It's hilarious. Yeah.
Yep. Cowboys got a lot of problems.
So. Yes, they do. Seattle Seahawks at Arizona Cardinals. Thanksgiving. Good Lord. Thursday night.
Not Thanksgiving yet.
I'm hungry.
You know, I am too. I like the way the Seahawks are playing, but I'm taking the Cardinals at home for 5.
I'm taking the Seattle Seahawks for 1. Minnesota Vikings at the Pittsburgh Steelers.
This was the hardest week to put any points on games.
It was.
I found myself after like 3 top ones, like I have to put 12 on something else. Yeah. This is in Dublin. I'm taking the Steelers for 6.
I have the Steelers for 2. Vikings are better with Carson Wentz though than they are JJ McCarthy, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Washington Commanders at the Atlanta Falcons.
Taking the Commanders for 9. I just, the way the Falcons looked yesterday, I'm taking a step back on them.
I have Washington for 3. Is Jaden Daniels going to play this week? I don't know. I haven't heard anything.
I haven't heard anything about him either.
New Orleans Saints at the Buffalo Bills.
Bills for 16.
I have Bills for 16 as well. Cleveland Browns at the Detroit Lions.
I like the Lions for 14.
I have Lions for 15. Yeah. Carolina Panthers at the New England Patriots.
I have the Patriots for 10. Don't know why.
I have the Pats for 7. L.A. Chargers at the New York Giants.
I got the Chargers for 13.
So do I. Chargers for 13.
I think the Giants played about as good as they could last night and still lost by double points. Digits.
Yeah. Chargers do struggle when they go to the East Coast for a nooner.
True.
Philadelphia Eagles at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I got the Bucs for 4.
I have the Eagles for 4. There's something about them. They just keep winning. Tennessee Titans at the Houston Texans.
I got the Texans for 7. If they don't win this game.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I have the Texans for 12. Indianapolis Colts at the LA Rams.
I need to shut up about the Colts because they're shutting me up, putting up 41. They've played good. I just like the Rams at home. Rams for 8.
I have the Rams for 11.
I can cover. I can just hear it right now.
Jacksonville Jaguars at the San Francisco Niners.
I like the Niners for 12.
Yeah, I like the Niners for 10. Baltimore Ravens at the Kansas City Chiefs.
Good game. I like the Ravens for 2. I want to watch. I wish I could watch them play tonight, though.
Yeah. Chiefs have been thoroughly unimpressive so far. Give me Baltimore for 6. Chicago Bears at the Vegas Raiders.
I got the Bears for 3. Raiders offensive line's worse than football.
Yeah, I have Raiders for 8. For some
Oh, wow.
Green Bay Packers at the Dallas Cowboys.
I got the Packers, but only for 1. I feel like the Cowboys' back's up against the wall. They'd have to come out swinging.
I have the Packers for 5. The Monday night matchups this week, we have 0-3 Jets at 0-3 Miami. Then we have the Burrowless Bengals at the Denver Broncos. So it's kind of rough.
We are 1-2.
Yeah. Jets at Dolphins.
I got Dolphins for 11.
I have the Dolphins for 9. Although if Tyrod Taylor plays, he's an ultimate Dolphin killer. So we'll see how that goes.
I'd play him over Fields, even if Fields was healthy.
I would too. Yeah, I would too. Cincinnati Bengals at the Denver Broncos.
I got the Broncos for 15. If the Broncos lose, I might need a sub on the following week's podcast.
I have the Broncos for 14. I think they take care of business. Should take care of business.
It's meltdown city, right? Everybody's panicking. I'm like, yeah. I'm not panicking yet. I'm not yet. I'm frustrated. I got concerns, but I'm not panicking yet. But, man, they could be easily 3-0 right now. But on the flip side, somebody could argue they could be 0-3 because they didn't play very good week 1 against the Titans. So
that's true. It balances out. Yeah. Can you name Purdue's top 5 career rushing yardage leaders in order?
Number 1 is Mike Allstott.
I got to bring it up here. I know it's Allstott. I know it's Allstott. Yards is Allstott. Yeah.
Number 2. Oh gosh, I know he's number 1 in touchdowns. I think he's number 2 in yards. Corey Sheets.
You are correct.
Oh boy.
3,341. He was only 300 yards behind Allstott.
Yeah, he's the last really, really good running back they've had. Number 3. Oh, it's 1 of 2 guys. I'm going with Leroy Keyes.
Leroy Keyes is not in the top 9.
Oh, great. Awesome, Tanner. Let's go with Otis Armstrong.
Otis Armstrong is 3rd.
Okay. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Who's 4th and 5th?
This guy literally followed Armstrong the year after he graduated.
I don't know who that'd be. Just hit me with it. I'll take a bogey. I got nothing.
Scott Dierking.
I remember his son Dan. He played in 2007-10.
I was wondering why that name sounded familiar. Dierking.
Dan Dierking. Remember him? Yeah.
Oh, boy. Number 5 is Devin Mockaby.
I did not know he cracked the top 5 already. I knew he was getting towards it, but
yeah, he passed Montrell Lowe.
Okay. Yeah, I should have known Montrell. And Montrell barely played his junior and senior year. That's the weird thing.
Wow.
But or at least his senior year. But cool. Yeah, Mockaby, yeah, he's a Purdue fan favorite, I think, just because he stayed there all year, 4 years. So
during a rough season last year, too.
Nice bogey, Tanner. That's embarrassing.
Thanks for watching the Tan and J-Man show. We'll be back at her next Monday. Luckily, we won't be talking a Bronco or Dolphins loss next Monday.
Yes, or a Purdue loss because they got a bye.
So have a fantastic week, everybody.